Hello and welcome to Crickviz at the World Cup. This is part two of our World Cup preview. Yesterday we previewed five of the teams. Today we're going to be doing the remaining five. We have Afghanistan, Bangladesh, India, Pakistan and Sri Lanka to go. If you missed yesterday's chat, you will be able to catch up with both that and this chat when we upload them later to all of your usual podcast channels. I'm Patrick Noon, and joining me again today is Ben Jones, Crickviz's head of insight, and James Norton Brown, our head of data science. So we're going to get stuck in straight into the teams today. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes on each one. It's got a few predictions, a few insights to go. And we will start with Afghanistan. Now, Ben, they might be sort of generally seen as underdogs, but they've got one of the best attacks in the tournament, don't they?
Yeah, they've got a cracking attack. When you look at, you know, traditionally Afghanistan have had a great spin attack, but it's not really translated across the board. But suddenly they've got a really well-rounded group of bowlers. They've got Fazal Haq Farooqi, who can swing the new ball as a left-armer, really take some wickets early on, backed up by Navin Ul Haq, who can really spear in at the death, bowl those Yorkers and variations. And he's had experience in the IPL this year with Lucknow, and so he's taking his game to the next level. And then you've got the spinners, Mujibur Rahman, who obviously bowls in the power play, those variations, those in-swingers and out-swingers, not really turning the ball, but very much doing what stuff through the air. And then also Rashid Khan, obviously T20 greatest bowler of all time, arguably translating it into the longer format. So between those four bowlers, you've got 40 overs locked in every single game of absolutely top quality bowling. And that's a real asset to any side and always brings them into the game as a potential kind of banana skin for the so-called bigger sides.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like obviously the spinners have been sort of bedrock of their like progress over the last few years. But if you think back to like early World Cups, but that's been supported by sort of high pace with the likes of Shapoel Zadran and Hamid Hassan, but they don't really have that anymore. But they do have, as you say, like sort of canny role specific bowlers like Farooqi, like Naveen. Who they don't have at the moment is neither Janat nor Gulbuddin, which presents quite a lot of emphasis on Amarzai. James, I think you've got a few thoughts about him.
Yeah, well, he's a talent in some people's eyes, and some of his underlying numbers, you know, he bowls fast, he bowls in the middle overs, he can hit long balls, but none of that has resulted in particularly good outcomes. He's averaging over 50 with the bat, over 50 with the ball, about 20 with the bat, and as you sort of said, in this squad, I can't see a route where he doesn't play every game. Unless on a very spinning pitch, they could use Nabi as their fifth, as the sole fifth bowler. Potentially Rahman Shah as like a leg spin sixth bowling option, but it's not great either. So while those top four bowlers are brilliant and they are absolutely phenomenal, they probably have one of the weaker fifth bowlers in the competition, and they also don't really have batting depth as well. So he doesn't give them batting depth or bowling depth, and he sort of it's not. Like, not having Gulbuddin in the side, who had a very good Asia Cup, you know, is a pretty well-proven performer at this level, which is very solid. It's quite a surprise for a side that just needs someone there to allow the better players, allow the really elite players to do their job. Whereas Omarzai is sort of high variance, which I don't think in this role is what they should be looking for. I think they probably view him as a talent for the future. And he might well have a very good World Cup. He's a talented player, but I think it's a huge risk not to be carrying a replacement for that position. And if he carries an injury or you know, if he just doesn't perform well, which he hasn't for a while, then I think they could be in a lot of trouble with how they fill out their team.
Yeah, and so, like, yeah, I think trying to find the balance, it seems, can be quite tough. I mean, that sort of covers off the bowling. Ben, what do you reckon of the batting? It looks a little bit inexperienced and, underpowered to me.
Yeah, it's a similar group of players that Afghanistan have used in other formats and over the last few years. But I think one thing that we've seen is that they just struggle as a top four or five to really get any tempo, to really get moving. And it seems to translate to having quite a long batting lineup. You know, Rashid Khan's often batting at eight, sometimes as low as nine. And, you know, we know what he can do with the bat. And we would expect a kind of gradual acceleration. But I think part of the issue that we're not seeing this kind of slumpy starts and then kind of faltering finishes to the end of the innings is that Afghanistan simply don't play enough ODI cricket. They've only played 29 matches, I think, since the last ODI World Cup in 2019, fewest of any team in the World Cup, including the Netherlands, who obviously boosted by the World Cup qualifying campaign. I think that when you play that kind of rhythm, that constant amount of ODI cricket, you get into a groove and you kind of, everyone knows their role. And it does feel like Afghanistan haven't quite reached that. So whilst there's some individual quality there, Raminullah Gurbaz is a really exciting player, more explosive. He probably needs to play a more conservative role in this side now. And Ramat Shah, again, has shown a huge amount of promise, and Zadran as well. And that there's a lot there, but it's not had chance to gel together. And I think that's going to be the reason why they don't take the absolute next step at this World Cup.
Yeah, I think one thing in their favour is they have got, they are playing quite a few games in conditions that we expect to spin. So they've got New Zealand and Pakistan in Chennai, and they've got India and England in Delhi. What are our predictions? Do we think they're capable of causing an upset, James?
Yeah, definitely. We sort of talked about how South Africa yesterday are susceptible to an upset because their bowling's not great and their batting's excellent, so it doesn't fire. Whereas Afghanistan are almost the opposite with that very high quality bowling attack. Sort of solid batting, deep batting, you know, they could skittle aside for 170, 180 and chase it down. They sort of tried that in the Asia Cup against Pakistan, but they got bowled out for 60, which is the other side of the coin. So I think they'll be very competitive. There'll be a lot of low scoring games when Afghanistan play, I think is my main prediction. And I don't think they'll get out of the group stages.
What about you, Ben?
Yeah, I've got there's this split in the World Cup between the top six and the bottom four. I think we all kind of agree on that. But I've got them as being the best of the rest, coming in seventh. I think for the reasons that James outlined, that bowling attack might not win them a game on its own, but if it can combine with a timely knock from one of the more talented batters, then I think they've got a couple of wins against them, including a couple of upsets. So yeah, hopefully they deliver a strong showing.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I agree in a sense. I hope they deliver a strong showing. I've got them ninth. I think I can't see them troubling the big boys, but I think they will get a win over the Netherlands at the very least. Okay, on to Bangladesh. James, you reckon this is quite a volatile lineup they've got, and conditions are going to be quite important.
Yeah, absolutely. It's sort of always the case with Bangladesh cricket. They're exceptional at home and poor away. I don't think that will change much in this competition. I think the really interesting thing about a World Cup in India is how variable the conditions are. So some games will feel like a home game and some games will feel like an away game. So I think you'll almost get both sides of Bangladesh within this competition. When they play at Chennai, when they play at Lucknow, they'll really fancy themselves. Whereas when they play, you know, in the more seam-friendly venues, although their seam attack is good, it's more their batting doesn't equate that well to pace bowling, they're going to struggle. I think the sort of stuff we've seen historically from Bangladesh, I think we'll see play out in sort of a microcosm in one competition. The issue for them is in grounds like Bangalore, where they have a couple of games, they're going to struggle. They have a lack of wicket-taking options in the middle overs. Taskin's been good there, but they don't have a leg spinner, a lot of finger spinners, so they're relying on getting something from the surface instead of necessarily creating something themselves. And they... As is often the case, they lack power. So that those high scores, those 350 plus scores, everything has to go right for them. Unlike some teams where just one player has to come off to push them to that 350, 400 total, almost everything has to go right from ball one for Bangladesh to get up there. So in the high scoring deck, that's going to be a problem for them. On the sort of tackier, more home, like more familiar conditions, I think they'll be a real danger. But I think they'll struggle outside of that.
Yeah, it does feel like everything has to kind of go right for them to get results. And it's fair to say their build-up, not a lot's gone right for them with a bit of turmoil with selection and so on. What that has meant, I guess, has been there's more of a focus on some of the younger guys. They've got a couple of under-19 World Cup winners in there, like Tanzim Hassan and Hrudoy. Ben, do you think either of them or those younger guys, the next generation, are going to come through? Obviously, they've got some experience head still there, but those guys are going to have to step up, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think the guy who particularly kind of stood out to me was Shoaiful Islam, just because he ties into a really, really useful pace bowling attack and the opportunity for him to really express his main strength, which is new ball bowling, is really, really plain to see. Because between the three bowlers himself, Taskin Ahmed and Mustafizur Rahman, again, in a similar way to Afghanistan, they've got really nice dovetailing skills. You know, Mustafizur has traditionally bowled more at the death, but he started to swing the ball a huge amount, swing that new ball. So he's joining Shoaiful as a more of a threat in those early stages. And Taskin is a particularly kind of classic, kind of new kind of bowler in ODI cricket, just that kind of Liam Plunkett style run and bang it down and enforce through the middle. And Taskin in particular is having a really, really good 2023. I think he's averaging just 17 with the ball this year, and he is genuinely one of the quickest bowlers in the world. It's not something I'm particularly used to from Bangladesh, you see this, but he really does stand out and is catching the eye of a lot of scouts and T20 recruiters around the world for that reason. And I think that because of that, like James said, it doesn't necessarily join particularly nicely with the skills of the Bangladeshi batters, and that's a shame because obviously you're never going to come across a pitch that suits them both, but it kind of cuts both ways. You're rarely going to come across a pitch which doesn't suit some of the Bangladeshi players, which should keep them in the game to some extent across the entire 9 games they'll play.
Yeah, I think what's interesting for Bangladesh is it's like similar with Afghanistan and probably similar with Sri Lanka later. You're not 100% sure where the runs are coming from. So obviously Litton Das has had a pretty good year, especially in T20 cricket. He could get them off to a good start. No one's 100% sure who's going to open with him. I think everyone thinks it'll be Tanzid, but we've seen Mahedi open as well. They do bat deep because Shakib, who is probably in a world 11 in ODI cricket, gives them that option as a 10-over bowler who's probably will average 40 or 50 in the competition. So they have a lot of batting depth. They have a lot of bowling options, but they don't have that one star batter and that one explosive batter where you're 100% sure this is where the runs are coming from. This is the player that's going to get us to these par totals. They're sort of hoping that everyone chips in, and that can work at times, but also that's a bit of a risk. Yeah,
and I think looking at their fixture, I think New Zealand and Chennai is the one that they'd have down as a target. You think that they might match up quite well there against the Kiwis. I've got them finishing 8th. I don't know if either of you are any more optimistic, Ben.
I'm marginally more pessimistic. I've got them slotting in 9th. I think that they will compete in games because of that attack and a couple of individual stars, probably Shakib being the obvious standout. But I just can't see them sustaining a run to kind of put together a string of wins.
Yeah, I'm similar. I think unfortunately, this competition is coming probably 2-3 years too early for the Tanzim Hassan and Tawhid Hidroy to really be at the level they need them to be. And unfortunately, by the time they get to the level they need to develop to, I think this bowling attack might fall off a bit. So I think, unfortunately, they're stuck a little bit in between generations. And I think, yeah, probably bottom half of the table finish, like 8th or something, will be about where they go.
Fair enough. Let's move on now then to the hosts, India. James, they are surely among the favourites for this. They're at home. They've got one of the best batting units in the competition. Is there any way that they are not going to make the semis?
I'd be very surprised. I think our outrights model has them about 75% to make to qualify. I think that could be a little low. They've got an incredibly solid batting lineup. 1-6 is pretty impressive. So they'll be really tough to beat in home conditions. You know, they've got runs. They can get runs from anywhere in the order. Even if we talked about being able to withstand new ball spells, they sort of have this red ball technique still just at the beating heart of the lineup, which should allow them to withstand a lot of early pressure. So I think they're going to be very hard to beat. Their bowling lineup is also in very good form. So I just think if they perform as they have been performing, they're going to be a very tough out in this competition. You know, Gill is really the player to watch and the person who people think, you know, this could be his World Cup, this could be his time. If any of those things prove to be true, then they're going to be really difficult to beat. They're definitely the favourites in my eye.
Ben, is there any weakness you think to their batting at all? It looks pretty strong on paper, but as we've seen in ICC tournaments before, they can come a bit unstuck through various reasons. Do you think that'll happen this time?
I wouldn't go that far that I think it's going to happen, but I think there's been some patterns with India's batting in white ball cricket over the last 5-6 years, and I think for a long time they were accused of being too conservative at the top of the order, particularly in T20 cricket, but also in ODI cricket as well. It's obviously less of a concern to be slow starting and a bit sluggish, but it is still a concern if you waste those first 10 overs with the field up. And what we saw going into the last T20 World Cup was that for about 12 months prior, there was all this talk about Rahul Dravid's revolution and Rohit's revolution within the T20 side, where they were scoring really quickly and playing with this like bonhomie and this real aggression. And then they got to the World Cup and they scored at a run a ball in the power play, and only the UAE was slower. Now, that's obviously to do with race, quality and pressure and all kinds of different things. But all of those things are present in the 2023 ODI World Cup. And in the last 12 months, India have been scoring quicker in the first 10 overs. Rohit in particular has really been going for it. I'm genuinely fascinated, rather than necessarily being kind of predicting it either way, I'm fascinated to see whether or not that approach can stand up to the pressure of a World Cup, and not just a World Cup, a home World Cup that everyone's been building to. Everyone's talking about it maybe being the last World Cup that has this kind of glamour, but that glamour is still very much here. And it'll be really interesting to see whether, against the very best bowlers in the world, Rohit, Gill, Kohli, can really stand up and come out the blocks flying.
Yeah, and with the bowling, it looks, again, pretty strong. You've got Bumrah coming back. But then the likes of Kuldeep and Siraj, you got one or two doubts about them, James? Do you think that they're we obviously know that they're talented. They've obviously, you know, done stuff in IPL and so on. But do you think they're ready to sort of make an impact on a global tournament?
Yeah, well, I think in some ways the concern is if they do, then I think this side's going to be, you know, incredibly difficult to beat. I think this is the weak point. It's Kuldeep and Siraj have almost dominated ODIs in this cycle. They've been brilliant. But the other side of the coin of other teams not playing lots of ODIs and not playing their first team in lots of ODIs is how will these players who've had a brilliant cycle, who've really performed exceptionally, seem to have made a leap before once all the sort of big boys come back in. Once your Stokes is back, you know, Warner, Smith, all these guys start playing again regularly. How does Kuldeep in particular and Siraj with the new ball do? Kuldeep in the past has had, you could say, potential issues with making the step up. He obviously had a brilliant IPL and then quite a couple of quite poor IPLs. Last World Cup, he slightly struggled to make that leap as well. They've obviously gone back to him in the cycle. They really back him to be that wicket-taking option through the middle overs. But I think if you look at some of his specific head-to-heads, I think he averages over 50 against England's top six batters. I think over 35 against Australia's. Like, he's got some pretty poor head-to-head matchups against the big players in the competition and the big players in the main oppositions. So if that continues, then, you know, I think that could be where you can get at this India side, because they don't really have a replacement for him. They obviously could go in with just two finger spinners, but I think they've shown a big reluctance to do that. I think if Kuldeep is the player he has been in ODIs for the last 3 years, then they'll be hard to beat. But we know that he might not be able to make that leap up, as Indian fans will definitely be hoping you can.
There's been quite a bit of chat around the various selection debates in the India squad as well. I think one main one for a while, it was slightly more skewed towards the incumbent with Shreyas Iyer versus Suryakumar Yadav for that middle order berth. And I think if you looked at the numbers with any great intensity, the value of Iyer was massive because of what he could do to protect Kohli in particular from slow left arm, but also some of the other guys around him who've got middling records against it. And so I think for me, that was always going to be, I'm Sky's biggest fan in the world in T20 cricket, but he's not proven himself in ODIs. And so Shreyas Iyer was always ahead in that debate for me. Now that means that then, do you need Suryakumar Yadav and Ishan Kishan as two spare batters on the bench in a tournament where, as we spoke about yesterday with England, there is going to be a lot of travel. India travel more than anyone else. It's the curse of the hosts. You've got to get around and press the flesh and show your face in all these different cities. And India have only really got one seam rotating option, to kind of give these guys a rest and amidst all the travel and the miles and the legs. And so I think that was maybe a slight missed opportunity to be a bit ruthless and go with an extra seamer in the squad. Obviously, if anyone gets injured permanently, you can replace them. But just for that rotation purposes, I think India are in a fantastic place. But there are just a couple of little minor tweaks there that would have put them in an even more dominant position.
Okay, then. And predictions then. I've got them coming second in the table and then probably reaching the final. Do either of you disagree? Ben?
Yeah, I've got them coming first and then reaching the final. And as I said yesterday, I'm not going to predict who wins the final between India and England before we get it. But I think India are so well equipped to compete in a variety of different conditions. They're a perfect team for a group stage. You know, they can win in lots of different ways, in lots of different conditions against different teams. So yeah, I think they're going to come top.
Yeah, I think they'll probably continue the trend of sort of host winners of the World Cup, to be honest. I think if they can get through the rigors of the group stage without any injuries, I think that'll be very hard to beat.
Okay, then. So now on to Pakistan. Their build-up was marred by injury to Nazim Shah, which, Ben, that looks like a huge loss. That would otherwise have been the best attack in the tournament, arguably.
Yeah, certainly the best pace attack, you'd say. Again, those dovetailing skills, Naseem can be used in all phases, but particularly effective, you know, up top and quick enough to be used through the middle. Shaheen, obviously famously devastating in the first over, but in the P1 phase, more generally, and can come back at the death. And then Rauf, again, maybe the quickest bowler in the world, particularly useful in those last kind of 25, 30 overs when you just want to really, really roast people. Nassim being out doesn't demolish their attack, but it takes a bit of the sting out of it. Hassan Ali coming in isn't quite as malleable with his phases. He's not necessarily going to be as effective in the power play as Nassim. He does strengthen the batting depth, but that's not really been an issue for Pakistan. They've got guys who can hit all the way down and a couple of all-rounders. So it's a real shame, I think, for the tournament, because I think Pakistan were arriving with a real momentum behind them. They've obviously been right at the top of the rankings over the last couple of years. And with a kind of solid batting lineup and a really fiery pace attack, they could have really done some damage. And I think it does just make you think back to the last World Cup final in 2022 when Nassim bowled that spell to Butler in the power play at the MCG, and the whole place was just, you know, ablaze. It was fantastic. And yeah, we're going to be deprived of that particular individual skill, but there is plenty of other kind of cause for positivity for Pakistan fans.
And James, are you a bit worried about Shadab Khan's form? He obviously seems a pretty key player in terms of balancing the team and giving them a spin option and can kind of float them down the order if needed. But he's been a bit out of sorts lately.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd probably even go as far as to say he's the most important person in the World Cup. I think he's got the most important role. His form's the most important to the side. If he can bat well and he can bowl well, he sort of completes this Pakistan side in a really nice way. It gives him that threat through the middle overs, both with the bat and with the ball. The concern is, you know, he's averaging 40 with the ball this year. He had a very good PSL a couple of years ago, but since then his form has dropped off in T20 cricket as well a bit. So I think his form is a concern. He obviously gives him that excellent batting depth. He's an unbelievable number seven. You have sort of Nawaz or Wasim in there as well at eight. So their batting depth is brilliant, and it gives them a lot of options. They also do have bowling in the top six with Iftikhar, but he really gives them that middle over wicket threat, which is going to be crucial for this whole World Cup. So I think if he seems to perform, I think this Pakistan team goes from sort of competing for the semi-finals to being a real threat for the title. Unfortunately, I think if his form continues the way it was in the Asia Cup, I think they're going to struggle to take wickets and really constrain teams in the middle overs.
Yeah, and then the knock-on effect of that would be, I guess, that you're then chasing bigger totals that maybe their batting lineup isn't necessarily set up for, Ben. I guess, like, it looks pretty solid, but do you worry about, you know, having guys that can really kick on at the death like other teams do?
Yeah, I think that's definitely an issue. I mean, I think Pakistan have got the kind of top four, like first 35 overs, pretty sewn up in terms of solidity. I mean, Imam and Fakhar has not been the partnership this World Cup cycle that it was prior to 2019, but it's still really solid. And I think that if they can maybe put the foot down a little bit more at the top, Fakhar in particular, he's a more fluent player at his best, then it gives Rizwan and Babar the chance to just dominate the middle overs in the way that they have for the last 4 years. It's mad how good Pakistan have been in that phase. I think they're averaging 50 runs per wicket. I think Babar's averaging 68 runs per wicket in that phase. It's best in the world. He scored 2,000 runs in that area alone. Basically, when they're able to just tap the ball around and kind of play low heartbeat cricket, Pakistan are fantastic at getting to 280. The concern is, whilst they have got 300 against every World Cup team in the last cycle, apart from India, they haven't done it consistently. They haven't done it a lot of times. They're not going out and blazing 330, 340 consistently. And you don't need to do that to win everywhere. You don't need to do that to win a World Cup. But it's having that ability that on your day, if you come up against someone who, you know, blazes a ton and suddenly you are behind the eight ball, it does feel like Pakistan maybe just don't have the gears. Iftikhar Ahmed is the only guy at the moment who has that form in the middle order to really take them to those higher scores. And thus, again, a bit like Shadab, he's a crucial player for Pakistan.
Yeah, agreed. I think we all agree that they're going to be kind of in the mix. James, you've got one last point on the squad in general.
Yeah, absolutely. Sort of to come off the back of that point. I think their squad construction's interesting. I think having, you know, Aga Salam, Shaw Shakir and Shafiq all in the same squad really does restrain them in the way that Ben was talking about. I think someone like Mohammed Harris would have been a really exciting person to see come in and have a go at that middle overs role. And I think it's a little bit disappointing that he didn't do so. I think that probably constrains them if we go on to predictions. I think, you know, that they've sort of lowered their own ceiling by picking those sort of red ball players in the middle overs. And I think they'll be in that fight for the last semi-final place. I think they probably get fourth, but I think they probably go out of the semi-finals.
Yeah, I've got them coming fourth as well. Ben, are you in agreement, or do you think they'll just miss out?
No, as long-time fans will know, I went with South Africa coming fourth yesterday, and so Pakistan for me are just going to miss out and come in fifth. I think that batting power is just going to hurt them on the bigger grounds. I'd love to see them really step up with the ball in the absence of Nasim, and I think they will beat a team that qualifies, but I can't see them, again, just putting enough results together against those better teams to get into the top four.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, we move on to the last of the 10 teams to preview. It's Sri Lanka. Now, similar to Pakistan, they also lost one of their key bowlers in the build-up to the tournament when Hasaranga was declared injured and unable to feature.
Yeah, absolutely. I've personally sort of been looking at the Sri Lanka team, getting very excited about them for years. I thought this World Cup could be a real dark horse, but with Chamira and Hasaranga out, that like elite potential bowling unit just doesn't really quite have the same feel. Like, we could have been looking at Thikshana, Hasaranga, Madashenka, Patharana and Chamira, which is just incredibly exciting. And then with a batting lineup that can you know, get to those past scores, as we've sort of seen with a couple of relatively successful Asia Cups for them recently. I think those injuries are pretty killer. Hasaranga, you know, would have been their best player. Chamira would have been their best seamer, according to our projections. So I think it's, you know, it's a real disappointment, not just for them, but I think for the competition as a whole, because I think they could have been I think they still will compete. I think they're still a very good side, but I think they've lost that, you know, real spark that could have really taken them to pretty high heights. And I think it's quite disappointing. And I personally would have loved to see it.
Yeah, it's a shame when you see players of that quality ruled out. So with the bowling a little bit underdone, Ben, do you worry then even more about the batting? Because as James said, like, they can get to par scores, but are they going to be able to post the touches that they might need with a slightly weaker bowling attack?
I think they can get to par. I'm not sure how much above par they can get. We spoke yesterday about how the Netherlands really lack power in terms of hitting sixes. Sri Lanka are even worse in that regard. I think they hit a six every 96 balls in the last World Cup cycle, the worst of any team at the World Cup. They just don't really have guys that clear the boundary. And obviously, that's fine when you're building a side around getting par and then that elite bowling attack that James is talking about, limiting sides. It's not quite the same when you're having to maybe punch above your weight. I think the key player for them in a kind of tactical role sense is Kusal Mendes, because you go down the likely top six or seven and some of the guys on the bench as well, there's not a lot of guys who can play high pace with any great conviction. And Kusal's record is not incredible, but it's up there. It's much more kind of vaguely close to elite. And I think Kusal Pereira is also somewhere in that midst. And between them, I think they need to almost take a bit of responsibility in terms of going out and attacking the high-paced bowlers that we're going to see in this World Cup. Because if they're not going to be clearing the boundary against the slower bowlers and against the spinners, and there are some good players that spin in this lineup as well, then they almost need to kind of try and take down, you know, cut the snake off at the head, try and take out the attack leaders and these more experienced players who've had, you know, disciplinary issues and mixed fortunes off the pitch. This is kind of their opportunity to be kind of senior players, leaders, and try and drag this batting lineup up to something that can compete with the playoffs with the bowling in tow.
Yeah, I think while we obviously, we sort of said we're going to miss Hasaranga and Chamira. It's probably worth saying their bowling attack is still very good. And in favourable conditions where Thikshana is a real threat, Thikshana is one of those players who, if the pitch is offering something, he becomes absolutely unplayable. Same with Wenalage and, you know, even Dhananjaya da Silva. Like, on pitches that offer something for the bowler, they can be a real threat and they can be brilliant. And I think for them, the start of the tournament's pretty crucial. They start with South Africa, Pakistan, Australia as their first three games. Two of them are in pretty favourable conditions for them. So I think we'll know almost after 2 weeks of the competition how Sri Lanka are going to fare. So I think getting off to a good start in favourable conditions against teams that aren't as used to these conditions, so Australia in Lucknow, South Africa in Delhi, I think if they can target the start of this competition, they can be a real threat. But they'll have to win the games that are favourable to them, because they also play some big teams in grounds like Bangalore, where I just think they're gonna really struggle to compete.
Yeah, they're another one where conditions are pretty important, I think, aren't they? Okay, what do we think is going to happen with them? I've got them seventh. I think with Hasaranga and Chamira, they could have been competing a bit higher. Would have maybe had them fifth, but I think without them, I've got them seventh. Ben, are you any more optimistic?
No, I've got them coming in eighth, but I will caveat it with James's point that I do think if they get off to a good start, then teams will be scared of them because of that bowling attack in certain conditions, and we don't know how pitches are going to play across the tournament. There's a lot of, you know, recently relayed surfaces, and there's weather around.
But I think I still think they finished like sixth, but I think they'll probably get off to a good start. I could see them winning the first game against South Africa, and then probably finishing sixth on the table.
Okay, good stuff. Well, that just about concludes us for our preview podcasts or spaces, whatever these are. But they will be available as podcasts when we upload them to our feed, hopefully later this evening maybe tomorrow, which is certainly before the first game anyway. And then throughout the tournament, we'll be doing more of these sort of throughout as the tournament develops, picking out on key themes. We're aiming for about, we'll say 10, I think, throughout the tournament.
We'll probably try and do one every kind of 4 or 5 days. That's kind of our general marker. But if something particularly exciting happens, we'll no doubt jump on and have a natter.
Yeah, so just keep an eye on the Twitter feed, and we'll give you the times well in advance, and just tune in and join us then. Bye.